pals of mine. If you're one of those who regularly scrolls through Craigslist's free heading, check out what this guy did in the small town of Winters. He does this every year. He looks for a free piano, usually free because it doesn't work anymore, or at least not well, and he deposits it in an area now known as Piano Park. Spring, summer, fall, it's there for anyone to play on. Of course, it's also exposed to the elements, and when winter hits, it's sent to a landfill. This year, however, he did something a little different. He hired a company to lift the piano high into the sky and drop it. Those standing by took bits and pieces for mementos, including the local brewery, which will hang the harp piece on its wall. The remaining pieces will continue on to the landfill. I'll bet there's an area in your part of the world who could benefit from something similar. When walking through various neighborhoods in town, I love it when I spot a tree swing. Swings on a playground are fun, but to swing on one underneath a tree, to hear the branches creak and the leaves rustling, it's a meditative nirvana. I live in a suburb of Sacramento, California, which happily was named one of the 10 best cities for urban forests. The city's urban forestry section manages 115,000 street, park, and city facility trees. Now, tree benefits extend beyond their visual contribution to landscapes. Listen in on my conversation with Ray of the Sacramento Tree Foundation.
When I was a kid, we had this tree in our front yard that was perfect climbing tree. And it also had this long branch, almost completely straight out, that I could jump up and swing myself around like I was in the bars in the playground, which was fabulous. And I could also swing up there and perch on that branch and spy on people that were walking by.
See, you know, that was the best question we ever asked our board of directors 10 years ago. Share us a story about climbing a tree. And I think the very first one just shocked everybody. She was 13 years old or 14 or 15. Her branch from her bedroom went over to the boy next door.
Oh,
and she would go
nice.
And sneak in at night and they'd hold hands and tell stories.
Perfect.
Everybody just, whoa, I've got to rethink my story.
In fact, when I broke my elbow, it had nothing to do with the tree, but anybody who's broke a limb will understand or relate to everybody having to share their stories and how they broke a limb.
Right.
Top two stories. One was falling off their bicycles. And number two was falling out of a tree.
No kidding. Oh, wow.
So it's interesting how many people still love trees. Yeah. They don't hold that against them.
Right. Oh, yeah.
The beauty of them. And I was also quasi-raised in Mendocino County along the coast because my parents were born and raised there. Mendocino County.
Oh, Mendocino, yeah.
So every holiday we had to go there because the grandparents were there. Mm-hmm. So the redwoods, to me, is nirvana.
Yeah.
Any time I can spend in the redwoods is fabulous.
Awesome.
And it's interesting how the redwoods... You also see some of those trees growing in Sacramento County, where some people might think would not be a good place for them, but they still seem to persevere.
Yeah, a little tough during this extended drought. Well, no, it's suspended for a while.
It's interesting, isn't it, how many trees are still holding their own, considering?
Yeah, I think one reason we have probably fairly consistent high water table here. We were just talking down in Visalia. It was an old conference here in September to August. Their water table had dropped 179 feet. Even the majestic oaks were all hurt.
And magnolias, I would imagine, too, because they like want the surface that's coming
right.
down. So being the Tree Foundation information source as opposed to water source. You probably field a lot of phone calls and emails about what do we do in the drought.
We have this year a lot, and it's been a remarkable difference from the 1990, 91, 92 drought, when really the theme there was, oh, what do? We need to water our trees. How are we going to water them? Maybe we shouldn't plant trees. The message this year, and it was really championed by the nonprofit organizations, but reflected by Jerry Brown when on March 7th is California Arbor Day. He led the Arbor Day proclamation was, we're in a severe drought, not a normal drought, but a severe drought, but we have to look at our landscape. And for each of us, we need to assess our most valuable portion of the landscape. And it will probably be the trees about 99% of the time. So let's take care of the trees, but let's let the shrubs and water go. Very different message. We felt that our educational, our tree literacy programs the last 20 years have somewhat paid off.
And of course, being a city of trees.
We are the city of trees, and what surprises most people is that we did not cut out a forest to create the city of Sacramento, like the vast majority of eastern cities, the northwestern cities and such. We literally planted most of the trees here. And there's roughly 7 million trees in our urbanized region. We probably planted 95% of those. Interesting things parallel today, 150 years later. The very first time the city council appropriated dollars for tree planting was for public health reasons, that there was a lot of waterborne diseases going around because of the flooding would come and the rains would come and the water would sit. And they planted over 70 eucalyptus trees in these low-lying areas, and that's a very water-thirsty tree to suck up the puddles and stuff. Now public health is in the forefront of why we need to increase tree canopy in our neighborhoods. And then the second time, maybe 3 or 4 years later in the 1860s, I think, the city council voted again to plant trees for flood protection. They planted them on the levees to shore up the levees. And of course, that's been a big controversy, not only here, but across the nation the last 5 years. The Corps of Engineers has said we need to devegetate our entire levee system. And of course, our Congressman Matt Sui was in the forefront just 6 months ago, where the Corps got rid of that one-size-fits-all policy and said each local flood-controlled arena can create their own management and planting policies. We'll approve them on their merits.
So it wasn't necessarily that the trees were a hindrance, it's just that that wasn't in their template and they didn't want them?
They believe they were a hindrance, but all the science... Two hindrances. One, they destabilize a levee. Well, I say the root system is in the levee, and when it fell over, it would tear out the levee. Well, root systems are actually very shallow, so there wasn't much of a loss of soil. A legitimate one is they need to inspect the levee during high flood stages from the landward side. So you had shrubs, vegetation, trees, and they couldn't see that bottom portion of the levee. That is a real problem. So they need to actually manage the trees, get the shrubs and vines out, and prune the trees. Another fascinating one was squirrels, right? And they had, I think, five major studies from wind throw, in other words, how much tree on a levee can take the wind till it blows over, and then when it blows over, what happens to the levee, to ground squirrels. And right out here, these levees are bare right out this window, and we have lots of ground squirrels. And the American Flood Control District is always ridding the ground squirrels. But the study up and down the Sacramento Valley found out that, wow, if you have trees on levee, well, then you have tree squirrels, and you eliminate the ground squirrel problem, the digging in the levees and the homes and the burrows and stuff.
It's always something.
Always one more thing you learn about trees, and quite frankly, why most of the time they're very beneficial.
A lot of people look at trees and just think that they're pretty and they provide shade and maybe keep you warm when the rain comes strolling through, but obviously they provide more practical benefits as well, like your utility bills.
Yeah, they're probably outdoors. They're the biggest multitasker we've ever had. You mentioned, you know, summer shading to cool for your utility bills. And of course, our utility SMUD, you know, just last week, did a new agreement for 3 more years of the Tree Foundation. So we're going to be, for the past 23 years, they have the largest, the biggest, most extensive energy shade tree program in the world. We've planted 500,000 trees with them. The SMUD, through us as the educators and resource people, and right to their ratepayers that choose the tree and plant the tree and care for the trees.
Well, explain to my listeners who don't have SMUD as a utility provider. Explain to them what their program is.
Right. Well, it's called Sacramento Shade, and it's a shade tree program where any SMUD customer, and mainly residential homes, but a business could also qualify, and it's for energy saving shade trees. And it's fascinating economy behind it. And the economy is during peak summer, our peak energy demand is summer energy. And energy is hard to find and it's very expensive. So they can lower that peak energy demand. It saves the utility a lots of dollars and lots of angst finding the energy to begin with, let alone paying for it. And so they have created what they affectionately call a Fathom Energy Conservation Power Plant, where they're able to provide the trees and the educational services of the Tree Foundation and the expertise, and the customer, either through the internet, but also through an on-site visit from one of our community foresters, they will select their trees, up to 10 trees, to optimize energy savings. And we know a large tree on the west side of the house, furthest from the house, like 35 to 40 feet, is the largest savings when it comes to summer energy savings. We know that south side, small tree, near the house is the least saving tree. So we only have about 23 places that we can plant trees. It's really a sophisticated program. That's probably why it's lasted so long. It's also a popular program with ratepayers of SMUD. So it's effective. I think one of the interesting things we found out was that post-World War II, with the automobile coming into play, the suburbs coming into play, and electricity coming into play, particularly the air conditioner. That was 1956 is when Sacramento flipped from the annual high peak demand being wintertime to summertime because the number of air conditioners being turned on. We love to pose the question and haven't found the answer. Well, how many trees will it take us to flip the peak energy back to wintertime?
So tell me the history of the Tree Foundation.
It's a rich history with lots of really great players and an interesting start indeed. It It was circuitous through the voters of California that passed Prop 13 in 1978. That kind of froze the property tax to, you know, no more than 1% per year. And so by 1981, the mayor of Sacramento and Phil Eisenberg at the time and the county board supervisor's chair, Ila Colin, they got together and said, we're going to see a problem this year. We made it through the 79 budget, the 80 budget. And the 81 budget, okay, but the 82 budget, they were going to cut every budget that didn't have a voice. And so they got 150 community leaders and civic leaders and neighborhood activists together in the afternoon one day and asked if this group would want to start the Sacramento Tree Foundation so Sacramento's legacy, the City of Trees, would have a voice when it came to budget time. But an interesting way to start a nonprofit. And so Sacramento, that group broke into 11 steering committee members, and probably about half of them, 60 of the 150, joined one of the working committees. And about 7 to 9 months later, March 7th rolls around again, California Arbor Day. It's on a Sunday. Myself and the first board president, who also was the president of the American Lung Association, Jane Hagedorn, went over to Swallow's Nest in South Natomas, picked up the Secretary of State at 10 a.m. in the morning, Marge Fuyong, and we went down to her office at the Sheraton, 13th and J, and on a Sunday, she opened the door, walked over the counter, and incorporated us with the official state stamp on California Arbor Day. So we're off and running with this ludicrous goal. We had a board of directors of 37 people. We had a five-year plan. We had an amazing $60,000 in the budget the day we started. Technical advisory committee of 25 people. And we were going to plant a tree a day. 400 trees that next year. All on volunteerism. And we were going to impact the schools and the business community on the value of trees. Today's decision makers and the future decision makers. So we had three arms to this plan, which of course is a fundraising arm too. It took us a little while to listen to that technical advisory committee. Because we were the darlings of the media. We were planting trees and we couldn't get off the front page of the newspaper. And when one of the elected officials, Phil Cerner, was running for mayor, he kind of copied our logo and was very successful. That made the front page. That we were the political darlings and the media darlings, I guess, a better way. But we didn't listen to the technical advisory committee. And they told us, boy, when you plant a tree in Sacramento, it takes about 1,000 days, 3 years, for that root system to grow, the trunk sturdiness and the canopy to grow and the leaves. So it can pretty much make it in a very tough urbane environment, a hostile environment. So all of a sudden, we took that into account about 3 months into our glorious start. And then we also said, gee, you know, our volunteers aren't coming back. Well, maybe volunteers also need stewardship, recognition, and training. And so I was on the board, I put my name in the hat, and I was their first employee. Started from there.
Now, how did you get involved initially with the foundation and the idea behind it?
I think there's two major threads. One of them is somewhat of a thorn in the side of Mayor Phil Eisenberg, and two is more of an environmental ethic one. After I went to school in Santa Cruz, graduated, and went to work at the Conservation Foundation in Washington, D.C., working on a research assistant for a book on environmental ethics, came very clear that environmental ethics, they always came from the community. They never came from the top down. And so community building and community health was foremost. And so that kind of combination, my wife and I moved back to Sacramento, where I was born and raised, in South Natomas, in fact, in an old neighborhood called River Gardens in the 1930s. And the new South Natomas plan was going to put the Bel Air Shopping Center condominiums and apartments right next to us and put the roads through. And we thought that was unacceptable. It would change the quality of life of this small neighborhood of just three streets called River Gardens. And so I went down three times to the city council meeting with everybody. You know, I was a 28-year-old or something, 25-year-old, and everybody else was 60 or over, you know. And I think it scared the heck out of everybody. And they kept coming down that, you know, we want our neighborhood safe and comfortable, and we don't want traffic coming through it and such, all that comes with it. And we won.
See, there you go.
And so I don't know how I particularly got on the mayor's list. He invited 300 some odd people, about 150 people showed up at that initial meeting.
That's how it's done.
Yeah, right, exactly.
And what do you do now for the foundation?
I'm the executive director.
And what all does that entail?
Yeah. Well, that's the best job of all. I mean, part of it is because you get to envision. You get to map out the future of the Tree Foundation. Because we have the best staff in the world that are doing what our plan says to do today. And the only reason I'm here for 30 years is because the urban forest, which we do live in an urban forest, and its importance to us, it just keeps evolving.
So what are some of your current projects that you're working
on? The one with the Sacramento Shade Program is very, very large. They also have another one we've had from day one. It's called Community Shade, and they've been our principal supporter of that funder. And that's called Community Shade, where we work with local groups of all sizes and shapes in neighborhoods. We help them do an event, a tree planting event, and 3 years of care at schools, parks, streets, and other public places.
So you don't just walk away after the event. You're still there for 3 years.
That's exactly.
Nice.
It's been in our DNA a long time. It's separated us from a lot of groups throughout the nation. as far as planting trees. We're also very interested in, I've always been interested in the mature canopy. As we look to increase canopy throughout our region and nearly all the cities and counties, the equal formula of that is taking care of the existing trees that are there now. Because if we can get them healthier, they will not only extend their lifespan and the huge benefits that are so much larger than planting a small tree, because you have to wait 20 years. It also continues not their lifespan, but also their growth. All the benefits of a tree is outside of the beauty.
You said improve the health of a tree. So if you see one that, say, is diseased,
right,
you look for something, I guess, I would assume, that you can actually do something about before it's too late and has to be cut down or is a danger.
We actually take a proactive approach. We help people fix the broken approach, but that's the hire an arborist, you know, to go out there and do the job. And that's what's wrong with this urban forest picture. We don't have a perfect urban forest. In fact, we have a very disabled urban forest. And it drives an economy of arborists and tree businesses in the tens of millions, hundreds of millions of dollars in California and throughout the country. We do the front end side of it. And that is, talk about the first 3 years of taking care of a tree. Really, it's the first 7 years. If you can take care of a tree the first 7 years, you know, plant the right species, plant it in the right place, plant it in the right manner, and then you begin to prune it and to shape it, water it correctly so it's not overwatered or underwatered, and mulch it and such like that. Yeah, but really, it's a pruning part of it too, and the growth. After 7 years, you don't have the perfect tree, but you have a darn good tree that's going to save a lot of money. It's going to be a low-risk tree the rest of its life, because trees are one thing. They're very stable. And once you got that, the correct structure and the health and growth going, that tree doesn't need a whole lot of help. Now, let's say mistletoe comes in. There are some remedial things you can do for mistletoe. If you don't do anything with mistletoe, it could damage your tree, and it's debatable. All the way to death? Well, close enough where limbs are falling and damage is happening and people are getting hurt and stuff. We have Dutch elm disease through our larger elms. And so we're proactive on that one. It's taking all the elms down in downtown Sacramento, which would literally rewrite downtown Sacramento. That's how we see it and how we believe in it. We had to take out all these amazing elm trees. We worked with the state of California, the city of Sacramento, the county of Sacramento, and with volunteers. So now for the last, 23, 24 years, we watch for trees that show a sign of Dutch elm disease. But it's the same, roughly the same sign of a squirrel's ravishing the leaves and making the leaves turn brown. Kind of, it's called flagging. And so when it's detected, then an expert arborist from the city will come out and go, I think it's just squirrels, don't worry about it. Or, looks pretty serious. And so then they'll cut the limb and then send it to the state lab. And if it's verified as Dutch elm disease, that tree will be out in 1 or 2 weeks. And that helps us control the population, the health population, because Dutch elm disease, there's no cure for it. And two, it spreads by a flying beetle, so you want to remove the tree. But it could also spread by root grafting. A lot of these trees have grafted their roots together, being an elm to a sycamore or elm to an elm or whatever. Hmm. So you want to get that tree out as soon as possible.
Now, when you say you continue supporting a new tree for 3 years, how does that work? Do they call you when they have questions, or do you go out there on a routine basis, or how does that work?
Good question. We have probably the largest urban tree planting program in the world, and so we put out about the SMUD, about 10,000 trees to homeowners for energy savings, another 5,000, 3,000 to 5,000 for parks, schools, and streets. So we don't have the resources to go out and visit all of the trees. So what we do, we have a robust website. We have a stewardship coordinator that people can phone or email. And so through the website and through that, we rarely will make a visit out unless we think it might be a new pest or disease coming in, and we'll go out with some experts to address it.
You're like a tree life coach.
Yeah, life coach. Yeah, because we do. We send them to tree experts, you know, to help us out.
Do you hear from other cities and states that want to follow your program?
We hear a lot of that, because over 33 years old, and we have a very diverse palette of programs. Another one is we've been the preferred oak tree mitigation program for the county of Sacramento, which also goes over to the private sector of Sacramento. So when you cut down an oak tree in Sacramento County, you need a permit to do that, and it's not an allowable cut, because some trees you can cut, like for your driveway, the footprint of your house, you can do that without paying compensation or a fee.
Explain to my listeners why you're not allowed to do that.
Oh, well, oaks are our living natural legacy. They are the principal trees that were in this area. As earlier I mentioned, they weren't all over the area. They're principally on tight ribbons along our waterways, a little broader along the Sacramento River and American River, because the flood it would meander more. But the creeks and all would be very, very narrow. And we have over 70 creeks in Sacramento County. People can't believe that. And with those oaks, our natural heritage, our natural landscape, these oak trees are homes to, I don't know the number any longer, but it's well in excess of 100 animals depend on them. Birds depend on them. Insects depend on them for all the things that they do. Shelter, food, nesting, protection, and such. And so it really is, they're the kingpin of our natural heritage for those that are resident wildlife and also for those that migrate down the Pacific Coastway from Alaska or Canada to Mexico. So the Native Oak Tree Program, again, every program we have, first of all, of course, it's based on best practices and science and stuff like that. But we always want to have education and volunteers. So we kept to that very first 1990 lesson learned, that if we do this work in isolation, we don't increase the tree literacy or urban forestry literacy of our community, which affects how our community values and aspirations on how we grow out. So we're very cognizant that volunteerism and training and the old saying, the old iron rule, we all know the golden rule, right? The iron rule is don't do anything for anybody that can do it themselves. And so we're big on that. We're big on encouraging leadership, recognition, skill sets, training for other people to carry on the work of the stewarding the urban forest.
Now we discussed the heritage and the legacy of trees. You mentioned earlier about your vision. What are you looking towards now?
Well, we have a vision to build the most livable, sustainable community by growing the best regional urban forest in the nation. Pretty exciting. It's a vision that kind of gets people off guard just for a moment. And that's because part of that vision is a 5 million tree campaign. And that just kind of shuts everybody down. You know, 5 million trees, that's just too much, too big. I can't think of that, you know. Well, the 5 million tree campaign is based on the practicality of the Sacramento Area Council of Governments that harnesses most of the federal and state transportation dollars. And they're the ones that had a planning sessions about 10 years ago that is called the blueprint for the region. How are we going to grow the region? One case was business as usual. The money comes from the federal and state. Each of the 22 cities and 6 counties can come and get their fair share. And by darn, we're going to be competitive and we're going to just build out in the farmlands and we're going to build roads and we're going to have sprawl. The community at large didn't pick that scenario. They picked a MAR-controlled scenario that preserves farmland and open space and values infill development and use of existing resources like the infrastructure, utilities, roadways, electrical lines, and get gas lines, and try to minimize the intrusion and expansion into new areas. Well, with that all said, and this is future planning, we are the next growth area, if we like it or not, in California. It was the Bay Area at the Gold Rush. It was L.A. after World War II, and then San Diego, Silicon Valley in the 80s and 90s. And if you look at where California is going to grow, we're going to grow here first and then the San Joaquin Valley 20 years after we're done. So for the next 20 years, they're predicting 300,000 new residents, 300,000 new homes being built in this region. And it doesn't take a lot of math to figure out that's at a minimum 4 million trees. And so we want to work with the new development community and the planners and designers and architects to make sure that this time trees are part of the design of these neighborhoods and these homes and these streets and these parks and these schools and not an afterthought, which is normally the case. And that gets us to 4 million trees. And the other million trees is more our responsibility here, who we hire here and who we engage out in the community. And that is the underserved or under-resourced neighborhoods.
That's what I was thinking.
Just as they're deprived of what? Close-in jobs, good schools, grocery stores, transit options. Those also the same neighborhoods deprived of tree canopy. And we want to come in and work with them on their own terms, with their leadership, with their volunteers, with their goals and aspirations, and give them the tools and the resources to plant and steward a new canopy, which is of equal value and benefit of what Land Park has today and East Sacramento has today and McKinley Park and some of the newer areas in Roseville and Davis and Woodland and such. So two totally different visions. One is to help lift up, reshape our existing neighborhoods that we forgot that there is the benefit of trees and tree canopy, and then make sure the new neighborhoods don't make the mistakes, well, quite frankly, of all the new neighborhoods in the last, since post-World War II. Just, oh, you don't need trees, I'll come later. There's plenty of time to plant a tree. You know, and we know, of course, the best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago. The second best time is, of course, today. So to that end, we've just finished up this amazing study, research-based study, and we don't do the research, we convene it. So we have an expert advisory committee of PhDs in public health, about 9 people from New York City to Washington, to Seattle, Washington, to local. And we worked with UCLA, and we worked with a private health design firm, and some people from the University of Wisconsin, as far as the U.S. Forest Service in Davis. And we asked the question, in our region, we took a canopy index of all the zip codes from 1 to 10, and then we took the health indices from UCLA health surveys. Can we find relationships where tree canopy would influence the health and well-being of the people that live there? And there's peer journal articles coming out on it, so we can't share everything right now, but there's 5 strong indicators of the relationship between, or the influence between tree canopy and the health and well-being of a neighborhood, from instances of asthma to exercise to social cohesion, how you see your neighborhood to obesity. And what's most surprising is the magnitude of difference. If you have 20% canopy or 10% to 20% or 18% to 28%, the differential influence is absolutely amazing. Now, you have to remember, it takes 20 years to get there to increase that canopy that much. But it really does put out the signals that we better start right now.
If you have kids who need to donate community time for a school assignment or maybe earn a Boy Scouts badge, consider planting trees in a local neighborhood. In my continuing celebration of national parks, I'm heading over to Great Basin National Park in Baker, Nevada, which encompasses the hydrographic Great Basin, the Basin and Range region, and the Great Basin Desert. So, Great Basin actually encompasses many smaller basins. The hydrographic Great Basin is a 200,000 square mile area that drains internally. All precipitation in the region evaporates, sinks underground, or flows into lakes. No water reaches the ocean. In the park, you'll find Lexington Arch, one of the largest limestone arches in the western United States, standing at 6 stories. This type of above-ground limestone arch is considered rare. In 1964, a scientist was granted permission by the United States Forest Service to study some of the bristlecone pines growing in a grove beneath Wheeler Peak. The researcher was studying the tree rings of these ancient trees, which were known to be over 4,000 years old. Bristlecone pines, like most trees, add a ring for each year of growth. Scientists can study the variation in width to determine patterns of good and bad growing seasons in past years. The trees literally record the seasons of their lives in their rings. This is very valuable for the study of climate change. Now, bristlecone pines often grow in a twisted fashion, and one section of the tree may die off several thousand years before another part, making it very difficult to capture the oldest part of the tree in a core sample. The Forest Service granted permission for the researcher to take core samples from several old-looking bristlecone pines and to cut one down to obtain a more accurate count. The tree the researcher selected to cut down, unfortunately, turned out to have been the oldest living tree ever found. These ancient trees are now protected on federal lands, in part due to the public outcry over the loss of that ancient tree, dubbed Prometheus. The researcher responsible for cutting down the tree later became one of the strongest advocates for the creation of Great Basin National Park. The park attracts one of the largest known concentrations of migrant raptors in Western North America. In fact, the park's diversity of habitats, sagebrush, alpine, caves, creeks, naturally reflect diverse animal demographics. For example, mammal species, other than bats, in Great Basin National Park of special concern are the water shrew, yellow-bellied marmot, beaver, sagebrush vole, porcupine, bighorn sheep, ringtail cat, and the pygmy rabbit. Do something different. Start a new resolution today.